If we're lucky, and we're not often lucky, we find out that there's a term for something so ethereal and strange and hard to describe about how we look at the world, and that there have been essays and books and discussions of the concept, that once you have the key of the word, you're able to unlock what they are. For me, in my 50th year, I became aware of the concept of liminal spaces. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Put simply, liminal spaces are spaces of transition. Not so much meant to be spaces in themselves, but points of transition, points of transfer between other distinct and obvious spaces. Spaces that exist in transition between other spaces. If you're having trouble visualizing that, you're not alone. Think of the moment when you leave a subway station or a bus station and you go down a hallway that's meant to lead outside. While there might be one or two signs or indications of where to go, that hallway is just funneling you from one congregational area into the outside world, and it itself does not have any inherent function or meaning beyond that. It is also transitioning you between artificial light and the light in the air of the outside. A change in senses and character and interaction built into the building without, in many ways, truly being part of what it is. If you want to imagine other places, think of a playground on the edge of a forest, the artificial creation of these rides standing in front of naturally grown trees. Maybe you're thinking about standing in the mouth of a cave where darkness is behind you and outside of it is a beach with waves, the feeling of summer and playing outside combined with the darkness and unknown of a deep, dark space. This is liminality, and it's something that I've felt for a very long time. Like all such terms, it's wildly interpreted and has lots of different ideas about what it consists of. People have lots of opinions about it. And for some people, like trying to get a grip on what they feel about a piece of music or when they listen to somebody talk, it can be very hard to describe exactly how a space becomes liminal. But for me, it all clicked into place once I heard this term and concept, because one of the things I am always doing when I am constructing either visual works or devising the transitions between different concepts or different creations is understanding how those transitions feel by themselves. In a compilation of words, there's often an introduction, or even introductions for each part, where an all-seeing editor describes their feelings about what you're about to read, along with drawing conclusions about how it relates to the other essays and parts, whether they're text files, chapters in a book, pieces of paper stitched together in a zine. There is something holding them together that is not quite on the page itself. It exists only as a place to lead you into a way of thinking before the next part comes to you. It also explains my fascination with framing and editing when I'm working in documentaries or putting together films, because I want there to be built into each and every frame a story of itself, of the different parts interacting with each other, and working out how to transition them between this scene and that scene is itself a function of liminality. And if your audience senses a disjointed, broken interaction between the two elements that you're putting together, they won't be able to enunciate why they don't feel comfortable, but they will feel uncomfortable. Built into my entire perception of the world throughout my life was a sense of architecture as music, with each area playing its own notes and my response to feeling those notes clash together when I looked at them. Now, this isn't synesthesia, where you feel different senses overlapping with others, tasting colors or seeing sounds. This is more for me like a crosshatch pattern, where you're making small squares that are overlapping, and using different pens, you give a different sense to everything, even though, ultimately, the pattern is the same. And when there's a liminality clash, when I find that the areas in between these different crosshatches don't quite work, it's like somebody poured water all over it, blurring it, making the whole scene indistinct. Sometimes, of course, it can feel like a delightful contrast. Think of a closed mall with a single beam of light shining onto one pink artificial tree in the middle of a fountain. That's a space of contrast. Or maybe the ubiquitous checkerboards of ray tracing history, which could be defined very easily mathematically, so they ended up everywhere, constantly standing in the background of much more organic and indistinct shapes. Going further in that direction, that's part of why I find such fascination in vaporwave, this aesthetic of music and visuals that the Internet Archive fell backwards into and has tens of thousands of examples that have been uploaded, with many more coming in every day. But those obvious contrasts are nothing when you encounter a subtle transition between spaces. Walking through a city of sharp angles and hearing conversations or sounds echoing through the buildings as you turn and find yourself inside of a small area with only a cafe and a tree and a few people talking, where your mind has gone from thinking about the city itself to one small patch of it and what's going on there, and feeling a beckoning to go inside of this cafe to find out what they have to offer, where inside, walking from this small outdoor area, you find yourself in a cozy wooden space with low conversations and clinking glasses and somebody turning to welcome you and ask you what you would like to have. If you are thinking about anything else when you turn that corner, you can be completely unaware of the knobs turning in different directions as you go from wide to small to micro to self, building up this narrative of all the different factors that are blending together to give you this quiet, small transition from the everywhere to a place. A place of subtle liminality for me are the pages of digitized computer magazines, where, as I switch from page to page, different computer ads call out to me with distinct promises of what they have to offer. I can feel myself being pulled in every direction as I go full color to black and white, full page artwork to single lines of text, each of them beckoning you like a door, wishing that you would walk through them and become part of the story that they want to tell. With the addition of emulation, we're able to give the last step. You go from the promises being made inside of these square ads into screens that show you what they were trying to convince you was what was going to happen. Sometimes, in fact, most of the time, you go past this beckoning door with all of its carved figures and heralding of the wonders inside into a white room with a very small cube containing a few lines of text telling you what you want to do next, or a crudely drawn space of itself on the computer screen where your arrow keys move you around, having you ignore the world around you, and if you're lucky, the design of that restricted, small world can actually envelop your senses as you transition into the abstract world that they've built inside. Obviously, our imaginations and our attention is what gives these spaces their character and their feeling. I question whether or not they objectively make everyone feel the same, whether somebody standing in a green room of fluorescent lights and looking over to a courtyard feels that same contrast, that transitioning between the spaces, and that the doorway represents something else within it and there are entire fields of study trying to understand how we each perceive the world and what terms we have come up with to help us understand it and describe it. We wouldn't have the Pantone system if adjectives were enough. But for the folks who share what I am talking about, what I am describing, it's either an obvious fact that they've known all their lives, or I'm bringing them through another transition of perception of how they've seen the world. So, what do I do with this new knowledge? Well, very little changes for me. A very long time ago, I discovered pleasure in being a guide, whether absent or present, providing people with a way to walk through entire fields of information, entire collections, either letting me tell them which ways might be good or designing the space to let them be and let them find their own rules and let them find their own stories going from one place to another. Letting what catches their eye be the next chapter heading in the book they're writing in their heads. I've tried to leave spaces in between different concepts so that people can derive the value, the enjoyment, or the horror of what they are seeing. The World Wide Web, with its HTML language, allowed me to play around with what different words and different colors and fonts could have an effect, knowing that somebody was seeing some analog of what I was trying to get across, large text to small, brightness and darkness, contrasts in between, having that all play out somewhere else without me having to be there and doing it automatically from a server. This felt to me like no less than a sword of fire that I could use to light the way around in the darkness. So, if nothing else, if you're somebody for whom none of this has provided any revelation, doesn't make any sense to you, or seems like a rather robust and bizarre way to describe living, let me at least focus on the fact that a half century of life later, I found words and meanings and descriptions of things that I had felt instinctually, and knowing that even at this late stage I could make that sort of discovery about a fundamental nature of my perception, maybe can be held as hope that you yourself have unresolved mysteries that could be solved with a simple key. That you very well, and your perceptions high, will stumble upon. Good luck. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Begoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere. Who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I wish at this moment to assure everybody that I am not on drugs. There's a moment in my childhood that became my mother's favorite story. I must have heard it 100 times. Where, when she was driving with me and I was very young, 4 or 5, we passed a road where there was a sign, and the sign said, "Dead End." And, as the story goes, I begged my mother to take me to the dead end. So she did. She drove down the dead end to the end of the street. And I looked around, and then I looked at her, and I said, "Where is the dead end?" And she said, "We're in the dead end." And I said, "No, where is the dead end? Mom, where is the dead end?" This provided an incredible amount of entertainment for my mother, and she remembered it all of her life. Well, looking back, I can now see how I was struggling with understanding the transition between spaces when something became something else, the idea that a street could no longer be a street, that the end of a street represented a place in itself, was more than I could handle at the time, and also, it tells me that even at that young age, I felt a longing that around the corner, down a street, through the woods, through darkness, something would be there. Something worth fighting for, worth traveling to would be there waiting for me.